Welcome to the top.
1%. Oh, yeah.
1% of show. I'm Paul Salamanca.
And I'm Tom Bocard. Thanks for joining us today to learn how some of the top 1% CEOs, sales leaders, coaches, athletes, and other professionals have overcame adversity and built their top 1%er mindset.
That's right. And this show is live, 6 p.m. Eastern every Thursday. If you want to see one of these shows live, you could go to our home base, which is top1percenter.com. You could also see links to previous episodes there or download the show where all podcasts are available. So, Tom, let's get into this next guest, this next show. I'm looking forward to it.
Take it from the top, man, 1%. Take it from the top, man, 1%. Take it from the top, man, 1%.
All right, welcome to the top. I'm your host, Paul Salamanca, along with Tom Bocard, co-founders of the Top 1% Academy, a sales training bootcamp for high-growth companies and sales professionals designed to transform average salespeople into top-performing sales teams in their respective industries. And we've proven over and over again that with the right mindset, dedication, combined with our top sales methodology, anyone can make it to the top 1% in sales. But don't take my word for it. Let's quickly hear from some of our graduates who have made it to the top 1% in their sales leaderboard within 6 months of graduating from the top academy.
I was 200% to quota last month.
Top rep in North America month two.
Well, I got promoted. So that, and I think the academy definitely helped with that.
Because I just hit back-to-back months, which nobody on our team's done.
Our sales in the last month have really increased or doubled since January.
Well, I am honestly pretty confident in saying that I am the best AE on my team.
It's the way to be. You gotta be a top 1%er. You gotta seek out the best in everything you do. You gotta have the confidence and you gotta learn the skill sets to do it.
And that was just a few of many great results. But we have a show to get to, so let's get started. And today we have a very, very special guest, Charlie Neer, CRO of MIQ Digital. So that's a CRO of a company that's over $750 million in annual revenue. MIQ, if you don't know who they are, they're a programmatic media partner. They provide a range of services to help marketers and agencies achieve better connected marketing, and they shape future programmatic media partnerships. So the company is actually headquartered in the UK. They have 15 global offices across four continents, and they have over 1,500 employees worldwide. So, Charlie, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks for having me, man.
So you've been there for about 6.5 years. That's a long time to be at one spot. What's been the biggest change for you from day one to now over six years later?
Yeah, dude. I'm definitely part of the furniture around here. So the biggest change for me has been maturing my career and my thinking as a company grows sort of hand over fist. I think when I joined MIQ, we were a lanky teenager. We saw things we wanted to do. We kind of thought we knew everything about the world. And what we quickly found is how little we knew, as most teenagers do, as they grow and mature. So the thing that's really changed for us, and I think having a few PE partners along the way has been helpful here, is the level of professionalism and the level of rigor and dedication you have to run your business and to continue to run it successfully. I think if you choose the right company in the right space, I don't want to sound like it's easy, but building a business to 10, 20, 50, $100 million in value is something that can be done. I think what we've had to learn is the art of sustainability. It's like, how do we build, you know, from our latest valuation, like $1 billion to going to $3 billion? And how do we continue to grow and allow our thinking to match the timeline and the growth expectations of what we have for the business? And that's tough, because I think a lot of times the growth and the speed at which a company grows is often faster than some of the people can keep up with their own growing, even my personal development or the personal development of my peers. Yep. So that's been one of the biggest challenges, is like making sure we develop at the same speed as the company.
Yeah. And your direct team, over 300 people, I know it's a large team, didn't start off that way. So you talk about rigor. That's very important as you continue to scale and get bigger. What's one key area where you feel like if you were to go back, you wish you implemented something a little bit sooner?
Yeah. For me, it's really about the balance of expectations and accountability. I think, you know, when you come from a seller's background and most CROs tend to be the best seller at a company. Occasionally that happens. You get to be in this chair by being someone who's known for moving weight of their product, regardless of the organization they're in.
Yep.
And it's very easy to always look at attribution and think that those are the things that are going well, the things that generate high revenue or the things that hit top line fast or the products that fly off the shelves. But that's not always holding yourselves accountable to the truth. I think what you have to be really clear with is you have to set your expectation of what you're trying to achieve as a business, and you have to hold yourself accountable to the results. If you say this is our strategic product for the year and you go out and sell it or don't sell it, that's how you need to hold people accountable. And that's how you need to hold yourself accountable. It's really easy to say you want to gain weight. You just go out and eat a bunch of calories. Same thing in sales. Really easy to grow top line. Just go out and say yes to every deal.
Yep.
But the accountability comes when you have to convert those deals down to bottom line EBIT. You have to work with the product team to deliver it. You have to make sure the delivery team feels comfortable with it. You market your products appropriately. So really that balance of accountability and expectation. These are the things we're expecting. This is how we will hold the team accountable to them. That is something I wish I would have learned earlier in my career from managing the team. And then simply from a personal perspective, I think every good salesperson has probably pushed the limits a time or two. And I had a manager one time pull me aside and say, "Hey, dude, you need to learn how to respond and not react." Yeah. And I think I'm still learning that, still struggle with that, you know? And from my perspective, like that's what I've learned from a leadership perspective, the balance between accountability and expectation. And the thing I wish I would have known earlier from a personal perspective is always respond, never react. And I think there's a lot in that for managers and especially CROs.
So in order to grow the way you were growing, you had to respond in a meaningful way, I'm sure, to some decisions that you knew were best for the business. So how do you border that line where you're not reacting, but you're still responding in a forceful enough way because you truly know it's good for your business?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's always like a baseline of things you need to know about the business to be able to respond quickly. Yeah. There is a difference between a reaction and a quick response.
Yep.
To generate a quick response, like your fundamentals have to be good. You don't know your numbers, you don't know your business.
Yeah.
Flat out. Yeah. You don't know some of the particulars or who the biggest clients are or what the market's saying or what are the comings and goings or how, just in the back of your mind, a big customer might feel about your relationship. If you don't know that, your ability to respond accurately and quickly is dead in the water. And so it's very easy then, because the process, when you're in a moment and you have to make a call, the process of you're going through your head, like, I'm gonna have to find out all this information, or, you know, forget about it, I'm just gonna make a reactionary call.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you're up to date, you know all that information, and you know, if you were an AI model, like your training set was really good, you'd feel a lot more comfortable saying, I'm gonna sit on this for 15 minutes, 24 hours. And then I'm going to have a response to this. It's not going to be emotionally driven. It's going to be data driven. So I think how you respond quickly is you make sure you put, you know, the time in the mental gym and you're ready to go. And it's like, you know, the facts, the data, the numbers that come secondhand. That's basics. You can't be a good CRO not knowing that. Your ability to turn off your instinct right away, then analyze it with that data lens and respond. That's really the difference for me. And acting forcefully, I think, that's something I've actually struggled with before. And, it's probably the opposite of most people, but probably very similar for most CROs, where we're salespeople. And so, you know, one of our things is forcefully answering things. And for me, a very typical response when I was, earlier in my career was be forceful, even if the opinion wasn't great and I didn't know how to back down from that. And I think what I've learned is the power of conviction, and I can be more forceful with my decision in my response now, because I feel more grounded in my principles as a leader and making like really clear cut decisions.
I love that. And you're so right. You say know your business. We say that all the time. When you're a good salesperson, to be great is when you start to learn your business, your industry, you become that expert, then you become unstoppable because you become great at sales, but you also know the business. You could actually see things that are about to happen, that you could prevent your customers from going through the same mistakes that other customers have gone through. And that takes some time. So how do you develop some of your, you have a team of over 100 salespeople. How do you develop some of those newer salespeople into that type of salesperson?
Yeah, totally. I think a lot of that is really level based. You know, my business partner, Erin, her and I work really closely together, and she's a brilliant mind on personal development and personnel development of a lot of types of employees. So she and I talk a lot back and forth about some of those concepts for learning. But there's something that I've noticed a lot recently that I've been teaching and preaching, and I'm trying to go younger or less experienced in the company, I should say, more and more and more. And that I think is something every CRO probably has a moment of breakthrough in their career on. It's a Venn diagram, right? You have your, let's call it, industry specific knowledge. Like, I know a lot about programmatic media, but I can tell you a lot about how ad auctions work and absolutely bore you to bits.
Yep.
About DSPs, SSPs, a lot. Yeah, it would be very boring for most people. And if there's someone out there as a CRO of a wire mesh company that sells to airline manufacturers, I'd be bored to bits to know about their industry specific knowledge. But as a CRO, you need to have that. You get that by being dyed in that. Well, you're just dyed in that color, whatever your industry is, you just know it, yeah? But the other circle that I think makes a successful CRO and really is the jump is business terminology and how businesses operate. And what I mean by that is like the basics of a P&L. Yeah, so my industry specific knowledge is media. And then you have these business knowledge components, and that is so important to be a successful salesperson. You can't just think about the problem that your specific solution solves. You have to think about the business specific problems. So if I'm going into a big conversation with a large advertising agency, I genuinely care about my client's P&L. I genuinely care about their media practice because that's my area of expertise. Like I take that seriously. Yeah.
Yep.
For me, I always know when I'm going into the room with people, all right, this is so-and-so at this company. Am I having a financial conversation and a business conversation about their P&L, their income statement, their resource position, their stock price, their earnings call, et cetera, things that I would have done and known about them? Or am I having an industry-specific challenge? Like they want to know what's the latest with CTV. What are we doing about retail media and those bits? So I think what I've been trying to do is work with a couple levels down from me. So like our RVP layer, maybe even some of our senior sales director about general business acumen. So like,
love it.
Typical thing we might do is like, I've got a guy I'm doing a personal development plan with right now. He's a bit more junior in the organization than me, obviously a couple levels down. I asked him like, hey, get an earnings report from a publicly traded company that you find fascinating. Research what the terms are and put an emoji beside every one of the things in terms of what you like. Thumbs up, thumbs down, question mark, tombstone, you know, rocket ship, whatever. And we can talk about what that is. So I think getting that general business acumen is truly a transferable skill and something we've been trying to infect our lower level team with a lot.
It's so important. It just opens up the conversation so much more, and you're able to have that higher level, C-level conversation in the room. I love it. That's a great idea. How long have you been doing that for?
You know, I'm not on Instagram. I was, but I can't. I'm a doom scroller. And I saw it. I think it was one of the last posts I saw on Instagram. Someone had done it with Peloton.
Yeah.
I've been doing that trick for probably like 4 or 5 years.
That's great.
What I noticed, man, and like my advice to the CROs who are looking to strike more long-term business partnerships is think about the business concepts of your clients and like genuinely have a business to business conversation. For me, coming from the programmatic media space, we were all like learning programmatic, inventing programmatic, and learning these skills as we went. So having that vocabulary and that lexicon has been something that I think our industry had to develop, and we've all learned it together. And now it's like so fun to have that aspect of our business. Like I actually prefer to talk about P&Ls sometimes.
Yeah.
Not do like what's the greatest in supply path optimization. Yeah. So
that's great. So then what type of, what's your profile like for people you want to hire just getting in as a sales rep to your company? Who ends up being very successful?
Yeah, three characteristics. I saw this on, I don't know, one of those people who's always on LinkedIn. I think Simon Sinek. It's like autonomy, purpose, mastery. You have to have those three things for me. Autonomous means if you're given the things you need to do your job, you can go and do them and deliver the results. Purpose is, I like purpose-driven people. When people's feet hit the ground in the morning.
Yep.
Like people who are like, I've got a purpose here. And it's, I like people who have their own personal purpose, but also espouse the purpose of what we're building together as a company. And then finally, mastery. Everybody is a master at something or should be in pursuit of mastery.
Yep.
And those are the people I love watching. Like we have at MIQ, the skill set outside of work is far and wide. Great singers, great dancers, great athletes, great, you name it, chefs. We have a guy who does book reviews. He's brilliant at that. You know, whatever you're a master at that, like that pursuit or that mastery is important to me. And that's across any employee. For sellers, there's two things and always two things. Curiosity.
Yep.
If you're not curious, like get lost. Like you're not going to make it in sales. You've got to you've got to be a bit nosy. You've got to be a bit curious and you want to know how things work and what gets the job done. The other thing is, if anyone ever interviews with me or anyone who's ever worked for me hates this question, I always ask people to teach me something inside 1 minute. And I don't give them any heads up unless I listen to this interview. And the reason why is I want to see, do they have the ability to teach things in a way that is understandable, simple, and quick without feeling condescending, put down upon, and remains conversational. So for a seller, those are some of like, those are just social skills that I do think a seller needs to have, that curiosity and that ability to teach in a non-belittling way.
That's great. That's really good. Mm. This is a great conversation. I could talk about this topic. We could go on forever, but I want to know a little bit more about you. I'm sure you weren't always running sales or revenue for a $700-800 million company. There had to be a moment in time where your back was against the wall and you had to overcome some sort of adversity. If you don't mind, talk to me about that moment, one moment where you almost did not make it. And how did you overcome that?
Yeah. Oh, man. There's thousands of them. If you don't have a lot of those in your career, like change jobs, man.
Yeah.
Seek challenge. I think there have been a couple like really key tempo moments in my career. So when I was an early seller, I had a seller who's was one of my first managers. Like everybody knows, he's like my godfather in the industry. And we went to a meeting with a client, and I had a buzzword. I would say, for example, I would say it all the time. And during the meeting, I saw him like he had a pen out, and every time I said "for example," or "like," or I had a fill word, he'd put a tick down, and I was like, feel myself like starting to get angry. He was like ticking them. And finally I looked up and I go, what? We're in the meeting with the client. I go, dude, what the hell are you doing? Like I got really pissed. And I was like, he was like, listen, this is something you're going to have to deal with. And like, we had the conversation, we left the building, and that wasn't really the adversity, but what it started was a bigger career about the type of person I wanted to be. So later that year, a big thing happened to me. They changed the commission structure. Yeah. If you're a seller and you're a CRO, you have to change commission structures. You have to. Yeah. But when you're a seller, and most CROs were a good seller before, you are pissed. Yeah.
Yep.
And I remember every good CRO has been the breaker of commission structures. Yeah. They're the people who always break them, set them up, break them, set them up, break them. Fine. Yep. That's the cycle. Yeah. I had a really bad reaction to a commission change. Awful, immature, terrible, nasty. didn't get it, top performer, acting like a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
And that same manager, he wasn't my manager at the time, but I remember talking to him on the phone and he let me just vent and vent and vent. And I was angry. And he finally said, dude, there's two types of people, man. There's the person who breaks commission structures and there's people who don't. You're already in the first bucket. You're someone who's going to break commission structures. It's just how you are. You're going to always overachieve. And he said, then there's two types of those people, the people who complain about it. And then there's the people who get busy breaking it next year. And he said, you've got to be the second or you're never going to make it. You're never going to keep progressing. So that mindset and that like day, I remember like, I almost quit my job. I was working for Yahoo in London.
Yeah.
I quit my job because I was like, you know, fuck this. Like, you can delete
it. It's all good.
I was like, you know, to hell with this. It's going to be, I'm out. I didn't want to do that. So that was a low. But during COVID was also a major low. So I do want to talk about that because there's something that we did at MIQ I'm really proud of.
Yep.
And hopefully revenue leaders can take note here. When the pandemic hit, everybody was afraid. Yeah. I mean, fear was everywhere. Fear is the silent killer. I think that's the start of the poem in Dune. I'll look back and fear won't be there, whatever it is. A great poem. Everybody was afraid. And I think people weren't just afraid for their health. People were afraid for their jobs, their financial situation, their mortgages, their parents, their family, their friends, their dogs. Remember when people thought dogs were getting COVID? It was a nightmare. Yeah. And, you know, I remember having a conversation with the board and at MIQ, and we made this decision that like, and to be fair to our founder, Gorman, he made the call. He's like, I don't want people to be afraid. So what we did is we rolled out something called Project Unity, and we guaranteed, regardless of performance, that for the remainder of that year, everybody would have a job at MIQ, even if it cost us all the money we had ever made as a company.
Wow.
The other thing we did was we upped commissions for our sellers and our traders and said, like, every dollar is going to be worth more right now. Because we felt like it not only gave people that extra security of wanting to go out and earn, but it also gave people that security of needing to do something with their brains inside the house. Yeah. It's like, let's just all get busy on it. Now, we did take like a 4-day work week approach in exchange for like a salary reduction, which varied from like 12 to 20% for all the employees. So it wasn't, but we upped the sales commissions and we upped the trading component. And we said, everybody's job is secure. And that was a make or break moment for us at MIQ, because if it would have gone wrong and we would have just kept everyone on and made that promise and delivered on it, it would have been disastrous for our P&L. One of the best growth years we had.
It's amazing. That's 9 months of guarantee for your entire company. That's a big guarantee.
Yeah, big time. And the ROI on that, man, I talk about it on events like this, talk about it in job interviews. Now people have gone on to other companies and talk about it. That's not even the value. Like, the value is when we talk to an employee and you remember back to COVID and you never remember being fearful for a job. You never remember being fearful of getting laid off or, you know, put out the pasture. So that was a really trying time for, I think, everybody, because revenue was all over the place, you know, but it really came down to managing people's safety and security. I do believe that's massively important at a company.
That's great. And people remember that. I mean, I don't know if you're going to leave anytime soon. You've been there for a while, but people remember that. So when you do leave as a leader, people always will want to follow you to wherever you want to go, knowing that you took care of them and you're a good leader. So speaking of you being there for a while, what's the next step for you?
Dude, I'm a lifer. Like, you know, I like the at this point, like I've put so much of my life in the MIQ. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan.
Yeah.
And it, like, MIQ is one of my horcruxes, like Voldemort. So like, I really feel like this company is a part of my soul and the people here. I get so much satisfaction from the people I work with on the exec board, and so much satisfaction for the team that I work with around the US, you know, the people who work for me, the people who work around me, you know, my business partner that runs the US. Like, I don't want that to change.
That's great.
You know, the financial component has taken care of itself, and been really fortunate in that regard. So really it's about optimizing the who, And I love surrounding myself with people that make me happy, and being around the people here and running the team of this, the team I have underneath me, like all you other CROs out there, like I would put them up against any of them. I'm sure they all say that, but like, it's a team of savages, and I feel really blessed to have them on my side. And like, yeah. I love, you know, and frankly, we're flying as a business and having fun. So next step for me, I think, would be just keep pushing myself to grow outside of just the chief commercial officer mold, chief CRO mold. Yep. It's like really thinking a deeper horizon. Right now, my horizon's probably 2 to 3 years. And I think that's what I notice about great business leaders is their horizon gets longer.
Yeah.
You look at Zuckerberg or Bill Gates or Musk, like they're great business leaders, controversial in their own rights, but like their vision is long, generational, decade. And I see that in our founder. So that's something that I think is like the next step for me, is kind of like lengthening my horizon of success and, you know, trying to build a legacy of MIQ so that when people look back, they think I built my career there, but also built my life there. Like I had 3 kids while I was working at MIQ. You know, yep. Two husbands or two wives, or whatever it is, you know, whatever the numbers are. Like, I want people to have that with MIQ. I want MIQ to be that platform for them.
That's great. And I know, again, you're having a great year. What's your number one priority this year?
Have some fun, man. I think seriously, if I could inject the steroid of 2 things into this year, it would be positivity and momentum. Yeah. And I think last year was tough. Every CRO had a time last year.
Yep.
Did we have a recession? Did we not have a recession? Is it over? Is it not?
Yeah.
Over? You know, our budget's drying up. Oh my God, they're coming back. It's October. Oh my God, November feels terrible. December's a holiday.
Yep.
It's like,
yep.
It was all over the place, man. Like, it looked like an EKG. So I think, you know, have some fun would be up there. So the positivity and then momentum. We are people of motion. Usually your sales organization is the heartbeat of your business. And I think having that momentum and having that drive is what drives the people inside the sales org. It's like knowing that you're driving the momentum of the business, knowing that you're motoring through things is important. Yeah. So for me, that's what I'm looking forward to in 2024. And I do feel the world, I'm hoping, yeah, the global economic condition is settling. But frankly, what I'm really hoping for is a modicum of success for every company.
Yep.
Us, competitors, clients, replacement products, your business, everyone's business. I think that does a lot for the world's sense of self-esteem. I hope it happens.
I love it. It's great. And it's also great to talk to people that enjoy what they do. They're at a good place, because there are a lot of people that who aren't. So it gives others, especially CROs at some startups, that, you know, it's not their fault. They get the axe. It's just bad timing. And they feel like that's the way it is. But you're living proof that it doesn't have to be that way. You can find a spot that appreciates you, that you appreciate. So that's great. And it feels like we could talk shop forever. Just want to thank you, Charlie, for coming on the show. If there was one advice you'd give your younger self out there who's looking to get into sales leadership or become a CRO, what would that be?
Yeah. Other than respond, don't react, what would it be? You know, there have been times in my life and times in my career when I was younger where I overpromised people or employees. Yeah. Those are my biggest regrets as a leader. Is over promising and under delivering. Not the number. Every CRO is going to be guilty of that maybe once in their career of over promising. But I think it's the dependability of the people and just again, expectations and accountability, like trying to under promise, over deliver more. That would be the tagline for me, Paul.
I love it. Great advice. Thanks again, Charlie, for coming on the show. It was great having you on. And for all you listening, please stay tuned for next episode next week.
Welcome to the top.
Oh, yeah.
We're killing annual quotas. It's the 1% of show, in case you haven't noticed. We talking cold calling and sales and start with tight rhymes. Round here, we maintaining a 4x pipeline.